Hi, we'd like to thank you for tuning in to the World Boxing Review Radio Show. My name is Aaron Snow. They call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions. And we travel the world for past, present, and future stars. And coming to you live from Pottsville, Pennsylvania, our radio aficionado, Bob Murray. How you doing, Bob?
Hey, good morning, Aaron. Hello. Yes, and we're back for another show. We're looking forward to it. We have some great guests lined up, and we got a lot of boxing to talk about, too. So busy week and in and around the scene, too. So ready to go.
Yeah, well, it looks like, you know, you have some breaking news that was going on. We're going to talk about that, about Don King and all that going on with him. We're going to cover that extensively. And also Anthony Joshua in the Usyk fight. That's coming up later on this month. And then you have Canelo Alvarez and Triple G for the trilogy fight coming up there in September, and we'll talk about that. And Jake Paul, Bob,
yes,
with him and Rahman falling apart, we're going to talk about that. But let me let you take us on that magnificent journey on that carpet ride around the world, Bob.
Yes, we start today still at Madison Square Garden, New York City, New York, USA. On Showtime, with or without Jake Paul, as Amanda Serrano, 42-2-1, 30 knockouts. She moves up to the main event, where she'll fight Brenda Karen Carabajal, 18-5-1, 9 KOs for the WBC, WBO, and IBO World Featherweight Crowns. And also the super lightweight confrontation between undefeated Brandon Lee, 25-0, 22 of those by knockout. Also taking on the 17-1-3 with 10 knockouts, Will Madeira. And that now serves as the co-main event. Joseph Ward, 7-1 versus Frederick Julans, 12-1 light heavyweight clash, tops the remaining undercard. Super lightweight Michael Hans Jr., 15-1, is showcased in Bridgewater, Massachusetts, headlining a card that also features Anthony Andreozzi versus Julian Baptiste for the state's open middleweight strap. And Rafael Torres steps in with Jonathan Gruber to fight for the state's vacant cruiserweight title. Jordan White, 13-1, 10 KOs, takes on Derek Murray, 16-5-1, 5 knockouts for the WBC, US, NBC super featherweight belt in the topper from Hanover, Maryland, where Brandon Chambers and Tayshaun Autry also battle for the ABF USA featherweight championship. Female super featherweight clash when Carice Brown, 7-1, crosses the ropes with Vanessa Bradford, 5-3-2, in the finale from St. Petersburg, Florida. As Joseph Boris versus Stephen Edwards in the show topper in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, which also features Justin Oregon versus Mitchell LeConte for the Mid-American lightweight strap. In Madison Heights, Michigan, the spotlight shines on 10-0 super middleweight Antoine Jones. The Zone will be in Fort Worth, Texas, for a big card featuring unbeaten Virgil Ortiz Jr., 18-0, all 18 of those wins by the knockout, duking it out against fellow unbeaten Michael McKinson, 22-0 with 2 knockouts in a welterweight bout. And welters clash again when Maurice Hooker, 27-2-3, and Blair Cobbs face off. Also, Marlon Esparza squares up with Eva Guzman to battle for the WBC and WBA female world flyweight crowns. Over in San Antonio, a Javier Fernandez versus Cesar Conte super featherweight bout closes the show. Super middleweight Sean McCalmont and Ulysses Jimenez meet up in Colorado, and in Glendale, California, they highlight the Danny Barrios Flores versus Ernesto Guerrero featherweight confrontation. Los Angeles tops their card with female superflies Sulem Urbina and Josep Vizcaino meeting up. Cornwall, Ontario, Canada tops their card with the Tony Luis 29-5 versus Stephen Claggett 31-7-2 super light fight. Super featherweight clash at the end of the night in Lagos de Moreno in Jalisco, Mexico, when Ibram Retamoso takes on Adalberto Garcia Covarrubias. Tijuana hosts the Javier Mendoza versus Jose Zuniga Vasquez bantamweight battle. And down in Medellin, Colombia, the Romero Duno versus Yogli Marrera lightweight bout ends the night there. Iquique, Chile hosts the Abraham Tevez versus Jose Luis Llana light heavyweight attraction. IC Sports TV will broadcast from Del Viso, Buenos Aires, Argentina, for the vacant Federación Argentina de Box Argentina Super Bantamweight title fight between Jose Alberto Arias, 8-1, and Sergio Martin Sosa, 12-2. The co-main event will see Jonathan Wilson Sanchez, 21-5-1, step in against Guido Emmanuel Schramm to battle for the open FAB Argentina Super Welterweight Championship. And also in Buenos Aires, in Merlo, the night is capped by the Maria Magdalena Rivera versus Antonella Molina female super bantamweight fight. The Zone will also be in Sheffield, Yorkshire, United Kingdom, to broadcast the Dalton Smith. He's 11-0, 9 knockouts versus Sam Omezon, 17-3-1 with 7 KOs as a super lightweight belt between two Sheffield natives fighting for the vacant 3BFC British super lightweight belt. Also on the card, it's Sandy Ryan, 3-1, versus Erica Annabella Farias, 27-5, for the Open WBC International Female Super Lightweight Crown. And Jordan Thompson, 13-0, versus Vasil Dukar, 11-5-1, for the IBF European Cruiserweight Strap. Belfast in Northern Ireland features Michael Conlan, 16-1, 8 KOs, versus fellow featherweight Miguel Mariaga, 30-5, 26 KOs. The co-headliner is the fight for the WBC International Silver Super Middleweight title between Padraig McCrory, 13-0, 7 KOs, and Marco Antonio Peribon, 26-5-1 with 17 knockouts. Also, Rodhan Farrell takes on Carl Murphy for the vacant BY Celtic featherweight strap. El Ejido in Andalusia, Spain, closes the curtain after the Alvaro Godoy versus Santos Medrano super middleweight fight. Action in Italy tonight includes the Francesco Castellano versus Luca De Loreto super middleweight clash, ending the night in Fasano Puglia, and also in Puglia in Taranto, the super bantam battle between Luigi Marico and Milan Savic topped the bill there. And Laconi in Sardinia features the Matteo Lecca versus Patrick Renato Horvath featherweight battle. Bombay Kinshasa in the Democratic Republic of the Congo spotlights the heavyweight matchup of Yannick Manda Katuta versus Musa Ajibu. The WBO Asia Pacific welterweight title fight takes place in Tokyo, Japan, when Ryota Toshiba slugs it out with Adam Diu Abdulhamid. China features a welterweight meeting of Liquan Wang versus Yijiang Wang. In Bangkok, Thailand, they feature two title fights. First is Yutapong Kongdi, 7-0 versus Ryan Ray Pontaris, 23-15-3. For the WBA Asia bantamweight belt, Tanez Ongjunta, 10-1, fights Jenny Boy Boca, 14-7, for the WBA Asia flyweight championship. And we end today in Auckland, New Zealand, with the heavyweight bout between Ben Lima and Mac Papali'i, closing the show there. And we have 14 countries going around the world, all the different continents, and we're going back to Madison Square Garden to talk about that one, too, man. What a day. What a week.
Yeah, what a week, you know, with the Jake Paul, you know, fight pulling out for various reasons, you know, with Rockman, Hossein Rockman Jr., you know, it's, we were saying that, that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
Eventually, you know, you're going to have to fight somebody for that kind of money. And it looks like it balled down to Bob about the weight, you know, Rockman's a heavyweight. And
yeah,
he has the amateur experience. He got professional experience. And, you know, to get him to try to shrink down and try to even the odds, you know, to have a guy lose weight to come down. But Rockman at 214, 213, he's still a good heavyweight and probably would been in dynamite shape to get down like that. And Jake Paul, you know, with with that, you know, if he's going to do it, he's going to have to take the steps that it takes to move a fighter along the way. But when you get big money from them TV networks, you know, you're going to have to fight somebody to get that money that makes it exciting. So we don't know exactly all the ins and outs of it, but it had to deal with different weights and stuff like that, that they have pre-made with the pre-fight thing before they signed the contracts, and it looks like a couple of things weren't met. So when they didn't make it, they pulled the plug.
Yeah, they wanted to fight originally at 200, and then they moved it up to 205. Now, yesterday, interestingly enough, Rahman did his own little weigh-in and came in at 206. Still overweight, but he's trying to improve, but it's too late now. And, you know, the whole thing is just, it was crazy from the start. You know, it was supposed to be a Tommy Fury fight, and now, you know, Rahman coming in heavy. But, you know, the one, it's like, so, you know, Amanda Serrano moves back up to the headliner now, you know. She's back in Madison Square Garden, taking on a former champion in Carrabba Hall. So there's still a good fight going on tonight. But, yeah, the whole this thing with Jake Paul was just kind of crazy from the start. We've been talking about the whole time about Rahman and his weight. And you know, the whole little show yesterday he put on to come down to 206, which meant he was still overweight. So he didn't make the 205.
But, you know, maybe rightfully so, Serrano should have had line the card from the beginning.
She's
a solid fighter. Whenever she fights, it's always exciting, no matter, regardless of who she's up against. And to see her get the opportunity to headline a card at Madison Square Garden, it shows that boxing for women have arrived, and they don't take a step backwards when it comes to think if they can or if they should be a headliner at Madison Square Garden. And, you know, this is going to be a good fight there, and I think it's good for boxing, and I think it's good for Madison Square Garden.
Oh, yeah. You know, remember the last time she was there with the Katie Taylor fight, man? That was a night to remember. Yeah, the whole, you know, packed house at Madison Square. So, yeah, she's returning back to that scene, and where they know her and they love her already. So it ought to be a great show too. And Carrabba Hall, she's a tough fighter too. I mean, I saw her actually fight there in Atlantic City a couple years ago, and when she won the title too. So, you know, it's going to be a good fight indeed.
Yeah, it's going to be a terrific fight, and we're glad that it's at Madison Square Garden. You know, Sometimes things happen for purposes and reasons far beyond our intellect. But I think with her getting another opportunity to fight Madison Square Garden to show that women's boxing is it. You know, it has arrived, and you're going to have to respect them. And they deserve those kind of opportunities on the big stage. And to see her getting that opportunity on the big stage in New York City. If you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. She's already making it, and she's coming back, Bob, to prove that hey, I'm here and I'm here to stay. And she's going to show up tonight and show out. And let me tell you, she ain't scared to sit in the pocket bra and exchange blow for blow, toe to toe. I mean, she's a fighter's fighter. You know, she got a lot of a heart, and so does the person that she's fighting. So that's what's going to make a good matchup, Bob.
Oh, yes, indeed. That's going to be good. And, you know, there's also a couple of good fights on that whole card, too. You'll get Brandon Lee defeated, you know, going to see what he moves up now to a co-main event. But he's 25-0, 22 KO, so, you know, that's going to be a pretty good matchup, too. So there's still a good card going on there. It's on Showtime. And just like real quick before we move on to other things, just want to give a little some numbers from Showtime. The Danny Garcia, Jose Benavidez Jr. fight a couple weeks ago, last week, I guess it was, they averaged 450,000, and it peaked at 478. It's the second highest Showtime show of the year.
Isn't that something? I hope that's good to hear.
Yes.
Yeah, that's good to hear. Well, at least we got somebody with some good numbers.
Right.
Well, Bob, let's dig into that Don King thing, because that may take a moment. You know.
Yeah.
What's going on with that? We'll give you some insight, and, you know, go on. First of all, what the champion made comments or something about not getting paid. If you can cover that, and then we'll go through that.
Okay, so what's going on here is there was a lawsuit filed Monday night in Broward County, Florida, where Don King's promotional company is based, and it's on behalf of Daniel Du Bois, and he alleges that he still owed money from his June 11 fight in Miami. Now, the numbers are kind of, you know, bounce around a little bit. They're talking somewhere between $463,000 and $938,000, and the it's dubious as far as what they really owe, because what they're looking at is did Don King Productions pay the sanctioning fee to the WBA, that 3%, and also a 30% to the IRS, the U.S. government. So you're talking about like $42,000 for the first bid for the WBA, and $420,000 for the taxes. And now they're also looking at now where, who paid what when. And there's also a statement then issued by Don King's attorney, Tony Gonzalez, where he mentions that Don King Productions had made all the requisite payments toward Mr. Du Bois' purse. And pursuant to the Florida State Athletic Commission, Director Patrick Cunningham's instruction, proof of payment in the form of the payment for the 30% IRS backup withholding was provided, along with a $470,000 set off towards Mr. Du Bois' purse at the instruction of Mr. Du Bois' promoter, Queensberry. So we also say, in addition, an escrow deposit was made in the amount of $134,000, representing a final balance due after applying a set-off of $319,000 for monies owed BKP, Don King Productions, by Frank Warren and Queensberry. But they're saying that all sanction fees owed by Mr. Du Bois were paid in full by the WBA. So that's, you know, it's a question of what kind of money went, and did the monies get paid for both the WBA money and the IRS?
Yeah, well, let's dig into this a little bit. These guys make acquisitions about Don King, you know, all the time.
Yeah.
And it's without doing their due diligence to investigate, you know, being an investigative reporter, you know, to dig in to stuff like that and see what the real truth is, instead of just writing an article with blazing headlines that draws attention to your story anytime that you mention Don King and any type of scandal that they can come up with. Now, there was other fights on the card too. Okay.
Right.
All of those purses and things, Don King met the obligation to all the fights. And you got to understand how the procedure works, Bob. You know, a promoter has to put up a bond to cover, you know, things
right,
like that. Don King met all the obligations that a promoter has to meet in order to put on the show. Now, if remembered, this fight went to a purse bid. So when
right,
you do a purse bid, you have to have certain amount of the money at different phases leading into the promotion. Don King already met those obligations, and he had to show those obligations to the athletic commission. Now, before a fight takes place, the commission has to have the checks and form of payment to each individual fighter. And he has to meet those obligations that the commission has set forth in their laws and rules and regulations. Okay, just before anything takes place. Now, there, to my understanding, we had reported this from the beginning, is that for that fight with the boys and Frank Warren and Queensberry Promotion, Frank Warren's son, there was a problem before the fight. You know, Don King Productions and Don King had asked for the money wire transfer account so they could make the money good. You have to show the letter that the banks were saying all of this is good for this to happen. Frank Warren and them wouldn't send that information. This is from the beginning. However, at the last minute, the commission had came up with a solution. Okay, we'll put the money in escrow. You put this in escrow and all that. Don King met that obligation. Now, here to come back, Frank Warren, you know, is saying that. Now, him and Don King had came to an agreement about that distribution deal of TV that Frank Warren has in England. Now, the fighter may not have been aware of that. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
That Frank Warren has a TV deal.
At BT Sports, yeah.
Right, and he can't promote He can't be a promoter and have a huge distribution deal like that in the United States. There has to be a firewall, and your roles have to be clear, crystal clear. So there's no fusion because of the Muhammad Ali Act, you know. Right. And don't forget, Bob, you know, this is the same Frank Warren now with Tyson Fury would have the scandal that has not been settled with Tyson Fury's manager. They're still looking for him.
Right.
United States government is for money laundering and all of that. You know what I'm saying? So
oh, yeah.
we're looking at quite a few things that when you read into the story, don't read into partial of the story. You got to read into the whole story and who is the champion's manager. He's caught up in some type of scandal, and already there's stuff like that going on, Bob.
Right.
So in other words, they're trying, because of different accusations in the past that have been with Don King, they're trying to dump all that nonsense on Don King and take the nonsense away from them and try to put it on Don. But really, it's on them. State government is looking at them because of racketeering and all of those things with Tyson Fury's manager.
Right. And Frank Warren
times before.
And Frank Warren and Don King have gone at it before, too, in the court.
Oh, no question. They do this all the time. It's one thing. They sit down and cut the deal. And then when it comes time for payments, Frank Warren said, don't want to live up that. So he wants to try to prove that he's doing everything right and takes Don to court. You know what I'm saying? This is an ongoing saga, and it dates back years. But don't forget, Don King is the one in the beginning that did a lot of business with Frank Warren and them to help English boxers to get them like Nigel Benn and all of those guys, Frank Warren with Frank Bruno and those guys, you know, earlier on in the 80s and stuff like that. And a lot of other fighters that they would put them on, have fighters go to England and then come back to the United States with Showtime and HBO and all of that. And it worked out good, and whatever happened, those guys had departed ways and stuff like that. And Frank Warren came up with Tyson Fury, and he has the boys are good champion. English boxing has come up because of the TV deals putting up the money where guys can. And not only that, Anthony Joshua with the DAZN deal with Eddie Hearns helped lift European fighters up out of the obscurity where they were at. And don't forget about the Klitschko brothers.
Right.
Yeah, but, you know, to get back to the payment, yes, the fighter is paid in full, you know, with the money and all of that sitting in escrow. And you have to listen to the commissions. The commissions tell you what to do. Believe you me, if Don King didn't meet the requirements of the state of Florida in that boxing commission, the commission would have been the first one to say foul play, because they're the policemen.
Yes.
And so certain things have to be inquired. Now that the money's in escrow, there's a problem. Most likely the commission is going to have a commission hearing. And when that commission hearing held, they would go through legalities and this and that with Don King's lawyers and their lawyers. And then they will say, hey, look, this money was put there such and such from our instructions. And now that, you know, time is over, this is going to be released, and this can be released, and that could be released. But the Boxing Commission, those are the ones to look at when things like this kind of happen, to defer to them, because they're the policemen of the sport.
Right.
And when something goes wrong, they have the, a strong recommendation to DAs or people like that, that there was foul play and these things should be a legal matter and stuff like that. But Don King has met those obligations and dealt with international fighters and stuff like that for years and years and years and years. And when this little stuff come up, you say, man, it's unbelievable. Not this thing again, but people play on the old nonsense of propaganda against a man who has done greatness for the sport of boxing. Not ordinary, extraordinary.
Right.
Nothing but greatness.
Yeah.
Yeah, greatness, man.
Yeah.
And at first they said he was broke, he'd have no money, and, you know, nobody had the money. He didn't have the money. He wasn't going to be able to win the bid, and then he comes and puts the $3 million bid, you know, up, and then they say, well, he ain't going to have enough money to meet the obligations of the purse. It's the same old nonsense. He just keeps doing business and putting his money where his mouth is. When he wants to do something, you know, to win a purse bid, he goes out and acquires it of the purse bid. And he showed this many times in the, when he wants to win them purse bids, he wins them. Is because he understands the business part of it. And the business part of it is the financial part. You got to know what you put out, what you're coming in terms of pay-per-view and TV. So you, what you put out, you can pay the fighters and promote the show. And at the end of the day, you make a little bit for yourself. You see what I'm saying, Bob? And he understands that.
Okay.
And at this stage and age, for him to be doing that is phenomenal, Bob.
Yeah, he's going to be turning 91 like in a week or so.
Yeah,
his birthday. So yeah, he knows what he's doing. You know, also the WBA. You know, that's the other part of it too. You're talking about the you know, Florida State Athletic Commission, and also the WBA too. You know, they're not yelling about it either. So they got their money apparently too. But that's part of things saying they don't know if we got paid. All blah blah blah. You know,
yeah,
what we're saying, it sounds like the WBA is taking care of too on that.
Well, absolutely, Bob. The sanctioning fees, and Bob, with sanctioning fees, we got our guests holding here in the crew. The crew, and like a champion, like Rudy Omar, and on the queue, man. Welcome into the World Boxing Review Radio Show. How y'all doing down there in Texas, brothers?
Good.
Hello?
Good. We're doing very good. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you, man, for having us.
Look, I don't want to mess your name up, and I want you to say it in the Latino flavor style of your name, because you're a great champion. We want to hear said in your language, man. You're both of y'all names. How you say it? Omar.
Me, my name is Omar El Relámpago Juárez. I'm a professional boxer out of Brownsville, Texas.
That's it. Yeah, that's it. And Rudy, come on with your look, man. Just put it all together.
Rudy, my name's Rudy Juarez, man. My name's Rudy Juarez, brother, and my son's Omar. Omar El Relámpago Juarez, brother.
Yeah, hey, Bob, can you, man, see when it says get that flavor, Bob? When they're announcing that name for a champion like you, man, talk about Rudy and Omar. Either one of you can go first about your career, how y'all got this started, man, in your boxing journey to become champion.
Well, we started, of course, in the amateurs. I was a truck driver when I was younger. You know, I'm 45 years old now. When I was 19, I started truck driving. I had my boys were very young, you know, I had him at a very young age, and I used to box when I was a kid, but I had to get married young, you know, provide for my family young, so I stopped boxing, and I started working as a truck driver, and I said one day when my kids are old enough, you know, I'm gonna take them to my coach and have him train them, and that's what I did, you know. My older son Rudy, he plays football now, Division II, he's in the Bethel University in Kansas, and he's the one that started everything. Omar would just go to the gym and just, you know, be a gym rat. Just, you know, just if he wanted to fight or not, it didn't matter. You know, I was just focused on Rudy, my older son. And as time went by, Rudy decided he didn't want to box no more. He was like, I don't want to box anymore. I want to play football. I was like, man, you're going to break my heart. He's like, nah, that's what I want to do. I was like, all right. So I turned to Omar, and I told him, well, what about you, man? You want to keep going or what? And he was like on a 10-fight losing streak. So, you know, so I was like, if you don't want to box, man, it's okay, man. I'll buy me a Corvette. You know, I'll waste my money on that instead of one of these tournaments. So, So, I still ended up buying the Corvette, but like 5 years ago, you know. But
what color is the Corvette? Oh, okay.
Blue.
Omar, you know, with your father there and your family, it's my understanding you have great support from your family. It's like, when you fight everybody, your family takes up half of the crowd. Is that true?
Yeah, definitely. I have the best support system. Like my dad said, I wouldn't be where I'm at today if it weren't for my support system. And I'm truly grateful. I'm always blessed. I'm always emphasizing how family to me is everything. And I mean, like I said, you know, my dad raised me I don't know, the sport, you know, some ways I was born for it, but in some ways I'm like, man, I'm truly grateful for my parents, because, you know, I wouldn't be in the position I am today if it weren't for them.
Yeah, Omar, you know, your community work is second to none. You speak a lot to a lot of kids in school and stuff. How'd you get into that kind of work? Because, man, that for a champion to be out there doing that is great stuff, man.
Oh, yes, sir. Well, you see, when I started boxing, I would listen to a lot of motivational speeches in YouTube to motivate myself. I would listen to Thomas, to Muhammad Ali, Floyd Mayweather, a lot of motivational speeches speaking about, you know, the hardships of life, the hardships of the sport. And eventually, once I graduated high school, I told myself, you know what, like, this is my source of inspiration. Maybe I could be a source of inspiration for people here in my hometown, just like this. So, you know, I got together with my team. We started in the elementary schools. From there, it got real, real big. We ended up going very viral here in RGV, and it was the feedback we got was the most important part. You know, I would get messages from kids, you know, telling me they have rough backgrounds, they have it rough at home, and I'm their source of inspiration for that. You know, for us to really make a big impact here, the RGV here in the Valley, here where we're from, it's a beautiful thing, it really is. And, you know, like I said, my support system, my parents always raised me to give back no matter what, no matter how far we got in our careers, you know, we're always going to give back, and that's just, you know, that's just the way I was raised.
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
to see how you pack them in, man, I've seen some. And you know, doing the research of the show and stuff, to see the crowds that you had and the videos and the picture is just phenomenal work. And I want to congratulate you and your father for all that kind of work, because that's life after boxing kind of stuff. And that's what we like to bring out in boxing. You know, you done fought in Fox, so people are very familiar with you and stuff like that. But they may not be familiar with the community work that you do, and we love to bring that kind of niche stuff that fighters are doing to help their community, because it's really, really needed, you know.
Yes.
So let's get into a little bit about the fights. These fancy outfits, man. Rudy, did you design them? Do Omar design them? Do you collectively design them, or FNNA, you know, Fight Night Apparel, you know, how do y'all come up, man? These uniforms are beautiful, man. How do y'all come up with this kind of stuff?
Well, yeah, man, they're beautiful. It's beautiful attire, man. Jay does a good job with the attire. You know, he has some of my fighters. I have an amateur team, about 20 some kids that fight, and a lot of them wear FNA, and it's you know, it's beautiful gear. You know, Jay does a beautiful job, and he's a great designer and a hard worker, man. He's a good friend, and yeah, Omar, we've worn like one or two of his apparel, and it's good stuff, man. Good stuff.
Yeah, so, you know, one day, you know, we interview a lot of kids just starting out. One day, you know, or a couple of days, man, we like to take the chance to line these kids up and give them 5 minutes on the air. Hey, Bob, that's the kind of stuff we do. We bring these young people on and give them a chance to talk, to express themselves. And that's what life's all about, man, and the community work that y'all are doing. I think y'all deserve that because y'all do an excellent job yourselves. But we would like to have your kids come on and talk a little bit one day. We'll try to arrange all of that. But you
well,
know,
yeah, man,
Omar, go ahead.
I have Omar's younger brother, man, Sebastian. He's a 154 pounder. He's been number one in the USA in the amateurs for about 3 years now, and he's about, you know, he's practically already, you know, signed with PBC, just like Omar signed with Al Heyman, and I mean, they're excited to bring him on board, but he's 17, so I'm gonna wait another year till I get him on the pro circuit. But he's amazing, man. He's 160 pounds. He's 6'1" and a half. I mean, he's a big dude.
Yeah.
He's long.
Yeah.
And he's a beautiful boxer, man. He's going to do great things, man. They're excited for him.
Well, hey, look, you got a great family that's doing great things. So what's up and coming for you, Omar? And talk about when you won the belts and things like that. Give us some of that stuff that you're doing, when your next fight and how you won the belt and all that.
Well, we're looking at maybe sometime in November. Right now, we're still trying to get the best date. But my last fight, it was in Mandalay Bay. It was for the WBC international title. And it was a very, very, you know, difficult fight against a well-experienced Ryan Carl. But it was, you know, real, real good experience. I definitely learned a lot from my fight. But if I'm being honest, you know, I feel like 3-4, like I said, you know, I'm gaining more and more experience after every fight. I feel like 3-4 more fights, we'll be definitely seeing a different Omar Juarez. I'm only getting more and more comfortable in the ring. And when I am able to, you know, put all my skills into the table, we're going to be definitely turning some heads.
Yeah, hey, look, it's a building block till you get up to that point where you want a super lightweight or super junior welterweight, whatever you want to call it. You know, there's a lot of great names down there, and your name is biting at the bit for those type of big names and big fights. And we're going to ask Rudy, what do you expect for these big fights and stuff like that that would be coming down the line? What do you think would be great matchups for you?
Well, I think a great matchups for Omar in the future, man. Of course, I mean, you got all these great fighters, man. We just need about 4 or 5 more fights, man, just to get them ready. But I mean, I'm talking about, I mean, Teofimo Lopez went up to 140, man. That would be a good fight for Omar. I mean, Omar sparred all these dudes, man. Omar sparred, I mean, he sparred Tank Davis when Tank Davis got ready for Santa Cruz. We sparred him for a week. I don't know, something like 15 rounds or something like that. I mean, Omar sparred some of the best out there. He sparred Regis Prograis. He sparred, I mean, you name it, man.
He's ready for the big time,
yeah.
and the opportunities are knocking at it at his door left and right. Hey, look, we have our guest hanging in the queue here, but before we let Omar and you go, just say something that you want to get out about your team and things like that.
All right. Well, I just want to say, you know, thank you everybody for your support. Thank you for having us on your show. And just watch out for my son, man. He's, you know, he's out there making noise, getting up there, creeping up there. So God bless. And I'm your friends from RGV Elite Boxing Gym in Brownsville, Texas.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll also, shout out to my boy Jay. Also, shout out to my boy Jay Torres, man.
And say your names in that Latin flavor one more time.
My name is Rudy Juarez, and my son's Omar El Relámpago Juarez. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, well, thank you, too, for coming on to the World Boxing Review radio show. It's a pleasure,
right,
man, and I'm gonna thank Jay with Fight Night Apparel for reaching out to y'all to bring you on the show. It's great having you, and we're happy to hear your story. And you keep up that community work, champ, and your father, you know, it goes a long way. Eventually, you're going to see great results from the work that you're doing. And keep it up. We need it.
All right, brother. Thank you. God bless.
God bless you, too, brother. Well, hey, Bob, man, ain't that something, that, you know, to hear them guys way down there, you know, to come up with that, man, and that community work, man. And it just ain't about boxing. It's about the work you do in the community.
Oh, that's a big part of it all. Yes, indeed. And as I was saying, we'll be looking forward to announcing a fight in November with Omar Juarez.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Bob, without further ado, you know, we have our next guest lined up here. We don't know whether to say your honor or something like that, but welcome into the show, Carl, and to the World Boxing Review Radio Show.
Oh, thank you. It's such an honor to be here. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, well, look, you know, to see a judge at boxing events and things like that, it's exciting because boxing goes across different culture lines, different statuses and things, and it just brings people into an atmosphere that's joyful, happy, you know, to enjoy watching the fight. You know, Roosevelt, our president, he loved boxing so much. He used to train and do it. Michelle Obama.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she loves boxing, and she used to train in the White House, Michelle Obama. And
wow.
I wanted to see. Yeah,
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, she used to train. Used to do boxing. I got pictures of them, her training.
Oh, wow.
The station. Yeah, she used to do it.
Oh.
But, you know, yeah. And we like the World Boxing Review would like to thank you, number one, for coming on. Number two, we would like to congratulate you for the work that you do for the great state of Pennsylvania, Commonwealth State, and you have a friend in Pennsylvania, and it's all about Pennsylvania when you got a friend like this. But you're only the second woman in Pennsylvania history to be on the higher appellate court as a judge.
Mm-hmm.
Explain something. Talk about your past, how do you went to law school at Temple, and all of that. Give our listening audience some type of history of yourself.
Well, I'll give you the abbreviated version. I'm actually a second-generation attorney. My dad was an attorney, and he became an attorney during segregation. And he went to Lincoln University undergrad and Howard Law School. And, you know, it was very difficult to practice in his time. He's a Tuskegee Airman. Because when he became assistant DA back in the mid-50s, black assistant DAs couldn't even practice in the trial courts, couldn't practice in the common pleas court or the trial courts. You could only practice in the lower courts, the municipal courts. So you could do preliminary hearings and things like that, but you couldn't do jury trials simply because being black. And women couldn't either. And my dad was part of the group of the first black attorneys in the DA's office to practice in trial court because of Richardson Dilworth, who made that change as the DA. He was the first DA to allow African-American attorneys to practice. So he came out of a very difficult time. When he started his sole practice, there were only two offices in all of downtown Philly that would rent space to black attorneys. And we're talking about Philly. Mm-hmm. African-Americans are the largest group in the city. And yet, you know, we hear about segregation down south, but, you know, these kinds of practices were practiced in the north as well. So I saw when I was younger, you know, it was a struggle for him to just practice law, even though he did very well in school, very well, an excellent attorney, but he still had to fight the realities of racism simply because, you know, the color of his skin. So when I came along at first, law was not my first interest. You know, I went to art school. I wanted to do other things. I wanted to get in the entertainment business and so on. I kind of worked that out of my system. And I went to Temple Law School. I went to Temple undergrad and Temple Law School, and I pursued, you know, some of these other interests. You know, got music publishing for a while when I graduated from law school. Then I came back and became licensed here and became an assistant solicitor working for the city, doing federal trials, all kinds of trials and things like that. Went out on my own for a while and did all kinds of practice. I was in city government a lot, working in city council. I worked for two mayors. I headed the Minority Business Enterprise Council, which the purpose of that group is to ensure that black and minority-owned companies, women-owned companies, companies owned by disabled people as well as veterans get their fair share of city business so that there's equity, diversity, and inclusion in city contracts. I did that. So that was a crossover with law as well. My first judicial office was at the trial level, the common pleas court judge in Pennsylvania. All judges must be elected. All judges have to be elected. So I had to run. You have to become like a amateur politician and get out there and get money, get endorsements, everything everybody else has to do to run for office. You got to get out there. And I won that election back in 2011, so 2012. I was handling all matters of jury trials and the criminal division, everything from drugs, shootings, you know, sex crimes, all matters of felonies and misdemeanors at the trial level. Then in 2017, I ran for the intermediate court where I am now, Superior Court. It's the intermediate court. The highest court in the state is the Supreme Court. So all of the appeals from all 67 counties, all there are about 500 trial judges all over the state, roughly about 550 or so, all those appeals come up to our court. So it's a lot of work.
Wow.
So we hear criminal, civil, family, orphans. Yep.
Now, I want to ask you, were you a council person in the city of Philadelphia?
Well, I wasn't a council person. I was a lawyer to an attorney to a council person. And I also, like I said, worked for two mayors as well. But I when I ran for judge, that was my, other than being a committee person.
Oh, well, congratulations. Hey, the first time out, you nailed it. And the people seeing the quality of person that you are, you know, to see, you know, I know a lot of judges, people sit, but you're well balanced with people, you know. Like going to Larry Holmes' golf outing for you know, Larry Holmes in Eastern Pennsylvania. You attended that, the golf outing that Larry Holmes had. Larry Holmes
Absolutely.
Is a good friend. Yeah. And
character matters, just like the two guests you had with Omar Juarez and Rudy Juarez. They were amazing. I mean, to me, you know, they really – exemplify the best of boxing. You know why I love the sport of boxing, because and the community work that they do, because character matters. It's not just
it does
being in the ring or being a judge, just being in the courtroom. Your character matters, your temperament matters. How do you treat people? All people should be treated with dignity and respect, no matter who they are, no matter what background, no matter what economic standing they may have. They all deserve, everyone deserves to be treated with dignity and respect, because we can never forget the humanity of the people that come before us. So they have a right to be heard. This is, the courts are about being heard. And they may not carry the day, but they if they're in my court, they're going to be heard fairly and given a chance to, you know, put it out there, go for it, compete for it, get their argument out there. And that my response is neutral, it's transparent, there's no agendas, it's unbiased. You know, we want judges that are impartial and fair and independent, no agendas or any kind of hookup with this one or that one, that everyone will be treated the same. Go ahead.
For fair play is what you look for in anything, you know, even playing field. When the playing fields are level, I always felt that you can compete with the best of them doing whatever you're doing. And that's what makes boxing so great, when the playing field is level. You know, guy goes train, you go train, and, you know, you meet up like that. And Omar and Rudy, what you're seeing them, you hear them talking about these little kids that they're grooming and they're developing, that they reach a dream, or just go in the gym and train to take off maybe some anxiety, and then maybe never want to compete. But to have that opportunity to walk in a gym like that and do those things, it's just a credit to them. And to see Omar out there going into schools, talking to large groups of children, it was amazing in doing the research to the show, to see these large crowds of people that he was talking to. It's just an amazing thing.
That's the best of boxing, you know, the fairness, the humility, you know, because the same with what makes a great boxer is the same traits that make a great lawyer and a great judge, you know, a sense of justice, fairness, the humility. And like you said, being with people, being good with people, treating people respectfully, tact, but common sense and understanding. And then having the mental and physical capacity for demanding duties. Because certainly it's clear boxing is demanding. You got to do your road work. You got to do your training. You know, it's rigorous. And it's the same thing in the law. You got to do your homework. You got to prepare rigorously to get in there in court, because your advocate, your opponent is preparing just as hard. So you have to be ready. Those are the same values. I guess that's why I kind of gravitated to boxing, because the same values that make a great lawyer are the same values that make a great boxer: industrious, hardworking, getting up. Before I came to program today, I did my road work. I was out there running this morning. I do my 5K every Saturday and Sunday. I was out there in the humidity. I said, I got to do my road work out there.
Any questions for Judge Carol?
Yeah. Hi, Judge. Thank you for coming on the World Boxing. I have to ask you, so when you watch a fight, does that little, judging come in there? When you judge fights, as you watch them and, you know, agree, disagree? How do you watch? Do you watch a fight with that kind of eye?
I probably don't know enough, you know, to judge it. I've done a little, boxer size, a little training, a little self-defense. So certainly I'm not equipped to sit up there and know all the nuances of, you know, the ring generalship and technique. I just admire first of all, to have the guts to get up there. Because, you know, in the ring, there's no hiding place. There's no hiding place. You're in there by yourself. There's no team. You're alone, and then it's being filmed and all of that. So just to have the heart to get out there, no matter how it comes out. And then I really enjoy like an even match, you know, personally. And I don't like a one-sided thing, but when you see people that are equally matched, like a chess match, and you see everyone's tip-top shape and the technique, superior technique, and you can see, you know, them figuring each other out and all of that. That's the drama of boxing, and then having the endurance. I was just thinking the other day of Ali, I think, is my all-time favorite, not just because he's done so much, because you talked about the Ali rule and all of that, but like the rope-a-dope and, you know,
he would come up with stuff.
The jungle. Nobody thought he would win. No, even his own people didn't think he was going to win. They thought he was going to be beaten to death. And for him to pull that out, and then the thrill of Manila where, you know, Philly champ, Joe Frazier, they're in there giving them everything that they had. And Muhammad Ali described that fight later as being near death. Because it was like 100 degrees or something. And they were out there. Those are the same characteristics you have to have in law, you know, to go past endurance and to keep pushing.
And
have
I'm
that kind of confidence
in yourself. I'm going to put you on the spot, Carolyn. I got to put you on the spot. What do you feel about women's boxing? How do you feel about women climbing in? Yeah,
I think women should have the same right to get in there and compete in boxing just like men. I mean, we have look at Clarissa Shields. I mean, she's phenomenal. What is
she
like? Four weight classes or something like that? Champion or four or five weight classes? Something unbelievable.
Right. Yeah. Gold medal, all of that.
Gold medals, and so certainly she's capable to compete as many women competitors are. Yeah, women should have that right to get in there. She is just phenomenal, and there's so many others that are competing. And
Amanda Serrano fights tonight. Yeah.
That's going to be great. Yeah, and these women, when you look at them, like, wow, they are really. This is real boxing. They're for real out there. Their technique. I mean, you can see. So it's like, whoa.
Well, Carolyn, we got 60 seconds. And we want to thank you again, Carolyn Nichols, the judge in Pennsylvania. We'd like to thank you for coming on to the World Boxing Review. We enjoyed it. What do you think, Bob?
That was great. Thank you, Carolyn, indeed, yes.
Yes. Very good. Well, thank you, both of you, for all you do to keep the boxing news alive and bringing that to us. Those of us who love the sweet science and want to keep up with it. And I'm really inspired that Michelle Obama's out there training. That's great.
Well, when we did, I text you her picture. She does very well. She got good technique. She does very well. Yes, she does.
Right.
But look, we want to thank our earlier guests, Omar and Rudy and Carolyn, for coming in onto the World Boxing Review radio show. My name is Aaron Snow. They call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions. And our radio aficionado coming live from Pottsville, Pennsylvania, who takes us on that mystical, magical carpet ride around the world as he's dipped in and out of how many countries, Bob?
14 today.
14 today. 14 countries today. So, and our boxing historian, Henry Hathcott, wasn't on the show today, but every Saturday from 11 to 12, we want to thank you for coming on. And see you next week, same time, same back channel.
Thank you. All right.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
All right.